Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki Raja Granta Srima Bhagavatam ki Samvita Bhaktivedanta ki Nitai Do Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pacham Paramadharmagyam Vaidarbhi Malayadvajam Premna Paryachare Ditwa Bhogansa Patidevata Patim Paramadharma Gyam Vaidharbi Malayadvajam Premna Paryachare Ditwa Bhogansa Patidevata. Hare Krishna. Tizazabhadharmakyam others. Mm-hmm. her husband, Parama Supreme, Dharma Gyam, knower of religious principles, Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, Malayadvajam, named Malayadvaja, Premna, with love and affection, Haryacharat, served in devotion, Hitwa, giving up, Bhogan, sense enjoyments, Sa, she, Patidevata, accepting her husband as a Supreme Lord. Translation for Purpa Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband, all in all, as a Supreme. She gave up all sense enjoyment and, in complete renunciation, followed the principles of her husband, who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. Purport. Figuratively, King Malayadvaja is the spiritual master, and his wife, Vidarbhi, is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Gurvashtaka, Sakshat Daritvena, quote, one directly accepts the Guru, the spiritual master, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, end quote. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. If a woman is fortunate enough to be the wife of a pure devotee, she can serve her husband without any desire for sense gratification. If she remains engaged in the service of her exalted husband, she will automatically attain the spiritual perfections of her husband. If a disciple gets a bona fide spiritual master, simply by satisfying him, he can attain similar opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanatimirandasya Agyaranjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Vitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Maha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Tadati Swapatantikam Vanjukaputuru Vyashta Kripasun Vireva Patita Nampavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I was thinking of this story. Many of us will be knowing it very well. It's in Krishna's Leela. It's a story of Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna. You see there's a picture of Krishna there with his mother, Jasoda. So God has a mother. Of course, He's the father of all the entities. But in order to exchange love in various ways with His different devotees, then He may choose to take a subordinate position. So Krishna has a mother. So, and in reciprocation with His devotee, Krishna, as a child, does a lot of mischief. And so his mother wants to chastise him, like any mother wants to chastise any child who's doing mischief. So you know this pastime where Krishna, he's known as a butter thief. So he likes to eat butter. And he was breaking all the pots, the butter pots. And then he would eat to his satisfaction, then he would feed to the monkeys. And then when the monkeys could not tolerate eating anymore, he would say, even the monkeys don't like this butter. This is how bad the quality is, you know. And this way he would kind of be criticizing his mother's cooking. And so then she wanted to catch him, to chastise him. And she was able to easily do so because Krishna's feet was filled with butter. So his footprints would be there everywhere so she could make out where Krishna was. And she wanted to chastise him for doing this mischief.
So Krishna begins running away in fear, even though he's God. Fear personified is afraid of Krishna, but he is running away in fear from his mother. And a prayer early on in the Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti herself is bewildered by this. And it is not that Krishna is just pretending to be afraid. Because if Krishna was just pretending to be afraid, then that would not bewilder Queen Kunti. Because she would know, Krishna is just pretending, it's all just a drama. But what's bewildering Queen Kunti is the fact that Krishna is actually afraid. That's what's bewildering her. How can Krishna, who is the bane of fear personified, be running away in fear of Mother Jasoda? She's just some lady, you know, apparently so. And so the yogis, they are very much deeply meditating, trying to capture Krishna within their mind, but they're not able to catch Krishna because he's too quick. But Mother Jasoda was able to outrun Krishna. Anyway, so this is how the pastime goes on. So she finally catches Krishna, and she wants to bind him to the grinding motar as punishment. First, she actually went to hit him with a stick, but then Krishna was crying so intensely, she thought, oh my God, I'm really doing, you know, child abuse, child abuse case here. So she threw away the stick, and then she tries to bind Krishna with some ropes. And mystically, although Krishna's body frame is very small, the rope was the width of two fingers too short. That's how it's described. So then she got some other rope and then combined that rope with the rope she already had. So the rope is much, much longer than it was before. And she went to bind Krishna with that rope, and the rope was still the width of two fingers too short. So that was like, it's the bewildering. So then she called all her gopi friends to come bring all their rope from their houses. So many gopi friends of hers, they all brought rope from their houses, and they all combined the rope together. So the rope was stretching, who knows how many yojanas. Big, long, long, long stretch, the rope was stretching. And then they tried to bind Krishna, and the rope was still with the two fingers too short. So it was very bewildering. So it's described there, we were hearing. Last year we were hearing about this pastime, and we were hearing that it is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we're also hearing about him here, how Krishna has unlimited potencies, power. God is not an impotent God. He's full of various potencies. Parasya Shakti Daiva Shuryate Swabhavika Gyana Balakriyacha. So he has unlimited potencies, and one of his potencies is called the Vibhuti Shakti, which means the Shakti of like opulence. And Krishna, the reason Mother Jasoda was not able to bind him, the reason the rope was still with the two fingers too short, is because Krishna's Kripa Shakti, or Vibhuti Shakti, was not allowing that to take place. So it was a great astonishment for everyone in the Leela. And the Vibhuti Shakti was not allowing. So Mother Jasoda's friends, they were saying, anyway, there's nothing, you cannot chastise him, it's not possible, just give up, let's go back to our various services. Her Mother Jasoda was very determined. No, I will chastise him, you know. If you all want to leave, go head on. I'll do it myself, I'll chastise Krishna, but he will be chastised. And so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this is the bhakti nishtha, the fixed determination of the devotee. It is the attempt to bind Krishna with her love and affection, which in Mother Jasoda's case was chastisement. That was expression of love for Krishna. So the bhakti nishtha is the determination to love Krishna, the determination to try to attain real loving service to Krishna in our case. So the bhakti nishtha must be there. So seeing the great heavy determination of the devotee of Mother Jasoda, then it's described that one of Krishna's, the king of Krishna's shaktis manifested, seeing the determination of Mother Jasoda. The king of all, so Krishna has unlimited shaktis, but it's that the king of all those potencies manifested, seeing the determination of Mother Jasoda. And the king, just like when the king enters into the room, everyone bows their head, right? That's what it means. When the king walks in, everyone offers obeisances. So when the king of Krishna's shaktis appear, all Krishna's other shaktis bow down. So with the king of those shaktis, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, is Krishna's Kripa Shakti, his Shakti of mercy, is the king of all Krishna's shaktis. When that shakti appears, all the other shaktis offer their obeisances. So the Vibhuti Shakti, which was not allowing Mother Jasoda, the divine Krishna, when the king appeared on the horizon, then Navibhuta Shakti also offered, in a, her obeisances, his obeisances, her obeisance, the Shakti is usually feminine. And then when the Mercy Shakti took the scene, then Mother Jasoda was able to easily bind Krishna. So there's a very nice, beautiful purport of Srinath Charitamrita Thakur. So then the conclusion is that it's a combination of the devotee's determination to attain the lotus feet of Krishna and also Krishna's Kripa Shakti has to help. Otherwise, we will not be able to attain vision of the Lord. So when that Kripa Shakti in the material world, when the Kripa Shakti becomes embodied, then that is called Guru, spiritual master. When the Kripa Shakti takes on a form in the material world, that is called as the spiritual master. The king of all Shaktis, when it appears in the material world, that embodied, then that is called Guru. Guru Rupe Krishnera Kripa Bhakta Gani. Krishna's Kripa, Krishnera Kripa, Krishna's Kripa, his Kripa Shakti, Guru Rupe, takes on the form of Guru to deliver the bhaktas, the devotees of the Lord. So the association, it's being mentioned here, Shakshat Daritvina, because Krishna Shaktis are not different from Krishna. So when if one is fortunate, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai, Bhakti Gata Bija. It is described how the living entities, we are not this material body, we are souls inside this material body. And due to account of various material desires, we're accepting various bodies life after life. In fact, if we want to understand what our desires were in a previous life, we just have to look at our material body. And we can begin to understand what type of desires we were cultivating in a previous life. Prabhupada describes like that in the Ishapanishad, how the material body is itself indicative of the type of desires we're having. Sometimes when I look at my body in the mirror, I'm like, what type of desires do I have? I have this horrible body. You know, at least I could have a more cute body or something. One may be thinking like that. Why have such horrible body? Why have this type of body? Generally, that is the situation with the conditioned jiva because he's always on the mental platform. So he'll never be satisfied with anybody, actually. That's the situation. Even if he thinks I have a cute body, now his body's too fat, this body's too thin. Like that is going on. So, Brahmanda Brahmite. Brahmite means we're traveling throughout the universe from one body to another body, from one, I just often describe like this, from one girlfriend to another, one boyfriend to another, one guru to another, one yatra to another. Chicago yatra is not so good. I either go to this yatra, or I go to this yatra, go to that yatra. No yatra would be good enough for you. Like, this is going on. So I'll go to Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan I'll really make spiritual advancement. And then in Vrindavan you see all the things that are going on there, I'll go to Mayapur. Lord Chaitanya is very merciful to Mayapur. You go to Mayapur, I'll go back to Chicago. At least they have clean water there. Like this, Brahmanda Brahmite, we're traveling body to body, place to place, constantly, non-stop traveling in the material world. And this is due to account of our ignorance. We don't know that there is no place in the material world that will be actually satisfying. Because the fact that we're even deriving any satisfaction from anything in the material world is a mental concoction. And due to the fact that it is a mental concoction, the mind is always changing its status. So the one thing that you thought was very wonderful before, all of a sudden you wake up the next day and it's not good. So this is the situation in the material world. And this goes on practically forever until one becomes Bhagyavan. So the word Bhagyavan means fortunate. When one becomes fortunate, then by the grace of Krishna, then he gets a chance to associate with Krishna's Kripa Shakti embodied in this world as Guru. And when he associates with that Guru will give him the Bhakti Lata Bija, the seed of devotion to Krishna, by which one can perceive Krishna. Sometimes people say, if God exists, show me God. But they do not realize that first of all, the seeing of the Lord is not done with the eyes, per se. Because the eyes don't see, in fact. It's the consciousness that is... Just like when the body is devoid of consciousness, then the eyes don't see anything, isn't it? The ears don't hear anything. soon as there is no consciousness in the body, the eyes cannot see, the body does not feel, the ears do not hear. So that means, with that understanding, we should ask ourselves a question, who is doing the seeing? Who is doing the hearing in the first place? Who is doing the feeling? So therefore, to see Krishna means you have to see, it's a state of consciousness. It's not just like, I'll see God with the eyes. There needs to be purification of consciousness. So the process that purifies the consciousness is called bhakti, devotional service to God. And when, to the degree we're performing that the devotional service, to that degree our consciousness is actually purified, by which we can actually see the Lord. Yata yatatma pramikrite so mat punyagata shavanabhidhanai tata tata pashati vasu shukshman chakshuryatai vanjana sampryuktam. So it says, yata yata means as much as, atma paramikyate so, as much as the consciousness has been purified by what sadhana? Mapunya gata shavana abhidhanai. By the sadhana of hearing and chanting about my glories. Then tatatata, then in that proportion, pashyati vastu shukshma, one will be able to see that subtle spiritual form, namely the Lord. And then an analogy is given, chakshurya vajana sampryuktam. Chakshurya means just like the eyes, if it has some disease, and then you put some ointment on it, then it recovers its ability to see. So, to the degree we are actually performing devotional service and purifying the consciousness, which is really doing the seeing, then to that degree we can actually see the Lord. So, the spiritual master gives the bhakti lata bija, he gives the seed of devotion and the form of transcendental knowledge. And then, if we are fortunate, fortune has different degrees. Sometimes one may be thinking, by coming to a spiritual movement, I am fortunate. But that is just the beginning of fortune. Fortunate has its ultimate perfection also. You know, by coming, definitely one is fortunate. Just to come to a Sunday feast one time, come to a morning program and participate, the one is certainly fortunate. But that is not the end of fortune. I mean, it is for some people, but it's not meant to be the end of fortune. Is meant to continue up till one gains his fully healthy state and spiritual consciousness. So then, if we want to continue the fortune of the association of Krishna's Kripa Shakti, then Lord Chaitanya advises that it is our responsibility to take that seed of transcendental knowledge received by the Guru and to sow it into our hearts. It is, he said, our responsibility. We have to sow it in our hearts. Sometimes we're thinking it is Guru's business to do. He gives a seed, but it is our business to sow the seed in our heart, and it is our business to water that seed, Lord Chaitanya says, by the process of hearing and chanting. And this way we become more fortunate. And the more we do it, then the more fortunate we become, as I've already quoted a verse describing that. If we want to take advantage of this human form of life, which is rarely attained, nirdeham adyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karanadharam, it is described that this human form of life is very rarely attained. There are 8,400,000 species of life. That's a lot of species of life. And they're always, like I think the modern scientists, they say something like 2 million or something. They hardly got an idea. They're always speculating. And it's actually 8,400,000 species, so many species of life. And of that, the human forms are very less. And among the human forms, those which are civilized enough to even begin to inquire beyond the scope of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, they are also very less. And then, amongst those who actually are civilized and have the ability to ask proper questions, those who will be coming in contact with devotees of the Lord are very rare. King Nimi explains that the human form of life is very rare, but more rare than the human form of life is the opportunity to associate with those on the path going back towards Vaikuntha, the pure devotees. That is very rare. So then even more rare than that is actually hearing properly. Generally, we don't hear properly. They lose regard. We don't have enthusiasm in hearing from, especially long term. If you hear one time, two times, like Ananta Chaitanya Prabhu was here giving very nice classes, But when I was upstairs by my room, I was like, I wonder how the devotees who live with him appreciate him. Because when he's just passing through here, we all would get very gung-ho, very excited. He gave very touching classes here. But then after some time, we might think, oh, same story. Oh, I heard this story so many times. He's told that story so many times. I don't know if he's got any new nectar like that. So when is the long term? The long term situation is going to really tell, which will give you the real flavor of the place. If you're just passing through, like someone may be passing through Chicago and our Sunday Feast program, and they will really appreciate Chicago. Oh, so nice programs going on. That is okay, but it's when you stay for a long time that you get the real flavor of the place. That time will we be able to appreciate. That is a real test of regard. We'd be thinking, I have such deep regard for the devotees. Yeah, when you, how much time you spent with them, 1 hour, profound regard. Devotees you live with, you don't have any regard for. And devotees you just spend just time with in passing, you think I have very deep regard. It is very artificial, generally. The real test of regard would be the long-term position. Just like when you first get a new girlfriend or you get wife, everyone likes their wife in the beginning, isn't it? Everyone likes their husband in the beginning. I don't know personally, but I know vicariously. Because I've seen many of my friends go through these exchange situations. So in the beginning, it is always full of nectar, right? That's what it says. Relationships and passions are full of nectar in the beginning, right? And at the end, poison. Divorce, homicide, suicide. All these things are going on. So it is, in the beginning, you may think, I am liking so much, but it's the long-term thing that tells what is the true regard. So when we are more fortunate, when we can maintain regard over a long period of time, even though the same stories are being told, same points are being told over and over again, actually it is not the same. It appears to be the same because we're inattentive. Just like if you read through the Prabhupada's books, many times he quotes the same verses and you think he's making the same point. But if you will be attentive to what he is saying, it is so many nuances there. It is not the same point. If you just pay attention, it is not the same. So in the same way, if we will be inattentive, we think it is all... Inattention means you don't have an ever fresh experience. Spiritual life is ever fresh, but it's only ever fresh for those who are attentive. But for those who are inattentive, then it is boring. Oh, same thing is going on like that. So then if we want to be more fortunate, we have to be attentive. And understanding what is the position, or what is the position of the guru, and what is the opportunity we have had to gain that association. So in order to do that, it is being mentioned here also. Ditwa Bhogan, it is mentioned here by Darby, she gave up sense enjoyment, because sense enjoyment causes one to be inattentive in his regard for Guru and Vaishnavas, Hari Guru Vaishnava. It is the sense enjoying spirit that causes the inattention problem and the distraction. And that's one, and that includes the mind. Manashashtan Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. Krishna says the jiva is struggling with his mind and senses. So for sadhakas, we may be able to control our senses to some degree. We eat only prasadam, we associate only with devotees. But because we are very used to evaluating things based on our knowledge acquiring senses and based on our deliberations thereof, we tend to think that everything becomes within the grasp of our empiric understanding. So then the tendency is to also struggle with the mind and senses in terms of evaluating Vaishnavas with our mind and senses. As a result, we commit offenses. So as mentioned here, ditwa bhogan, that has to stop. Unless we stop the evaluation program, then how we will appreciate the guru, how will we appreciate Vaishnavas? We will think, oh, same thing he's speaking. I'm seeing every day. Just like Indra, he was hearing his glories. His spiritual master walks into the room, every day I'm seeing. So next time I'll offer obeisances. Every day he's coming past taking darshan. You know, I'll do it the next time. Right now, something very important is taking place. I'm hearing my glories, so I shouldn't just stop that all of a sudden. That would be rude. He was thinking like that. And then his spiritual master could understand this fellow is about to fall now. So he just left, chastised him. And then Indra could really understand the mistake he made, but that didn't save him. He got chastised. So this is due to the sense enjoyment spirit. Unless one is very determined to give up sense enjoyment in the form of evaluation of devotees in this context, then there is no question of having the proper regard for Guru, for Hari, for Vaishnavas. And that means there's no question of chanting Hare Krishna. Because the holy name of Krishna, which is the supreme purifying process for this age of Kali, is Krishna himself, and he cannot tolerate such offenses. Just the evaluation of a Vaishnava is offensive. And then that will lead to, Prabhupada says here in the purport, it will lead to negligence and being disobedient. Because why? Because you think an ordinary person. Just like ordinary things you can evaluate with your knowledge acquiring senses, isn't it? Ordinary things is very easy to evaluate. I can understand this with my knowledge acquired. I can feel it, I can smell it, I can taste it. I mean, I wouldn't do that with the mic, but in this way you can evaluate with your knowledge acquiring senses because it's an ordinary thing. And in ordinary persons, you can also evaluate in the same way. Just like sometimes devotees express difficulty when you have to, when you give devotees like work, for example, I've heard devotees express frustration because with like ordinary people, you can just like blast them, fire them, and all these. But when you're dealing with devotees, you can't do the same thing because you commit offense. So you have to do like long-term thinking process. That wasn't intentional. But it's a fact, though. It's a fact. You can't just dismiss. You can't just dismiss because it's a devotee. So you have to like go through a whole thinking process. What words to say. If you were dealing with an ordinary person, you would just blast them. What is this nonsense? You're a fool and rascal. When you're dealing with a devotee, you have to be, okay, I can't say that word. I can't. Man, what can I say? You hardly can say anything. And this is a situation because it's not ordinary. It's not ordinary for someone to become a Vaishnava. Even a sadaka is not a very ordinary thing, very rare thing. So, with ordinary things, you can evaluate with minor senses. But when extraordinary things, you cannot do that. And a devotee, particularly guru, who is the embodiment of Krishna's Kripa Shakti, Goro's Karuna Shakti, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is his associates. And if we will be evaluating them, then the path to hell is wide open, no doubt. It means our life will become, our consciousness first will become increasingly hellish, and then as a result, our atmosphere is going to match the same. And you will only see hell everywhere as a result of a hellish consciousness. So unfortunately, due to a strong bodily concept of life, the tendency is to place a lot of faith in our mind and senses in its way of evaluating things. That is just the unfortunate situation of being too strongly attached to bhogan, to the bodily concept of life. So there is a necessity to force the mind to change its way of deliberating. Otherwise, there's no question of chanting Hare Krishna. There's no question of appreciating Hari Guna and Vaishnavas. There's no question of spiritual attainment. So one must force his mind to change his way of deliberating about things. So in order to help us do that successfully, then the words of the acharyas are our only shelter. It is mentioned, just like we are able to see the sun by the help of the sunshine, isn't it? That's interesting. By the help of the sunshine, you can see the sun. So also by the mercy of great personalities, we can see them, by their mercy. And that mercy is generally called their vakya, their words. Just like we say, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, Chetete Kuriya Akya, that the vakya of my guru is, I only want my consciousness to be filled up with that vakya, because that vakya is a sunshine which will allow us to actually have proper, a proper darshan, spiritual vision of great souls, including Krishna. So the acharyas have given so much bhakya. Particularly, I wanted to just mention in this regard that it will do us very well to avail ourselves to the songs of the acharyas. Of course, we don't sing so much I don't personally like to sing the bhajans in public arena because I feel that it's too much like concentration involved with playing all these things. That's one reason I don't feel like I can be very devotional in a public arena. Also, I think it's mostly more effective in a small environment than in a big environment, because a bigger environment, everyone's too much in the mood of sense enjoyment, and it kind of distracts from the mood that's trying to be cultivated. It's just like if you're singing like a Maharaj Jivan, that's a very intense, heavy song. And then you're singing in a huge audience and everyone's like, Maharaji, man, they like, you know, it's like the whole mood gets disturbed, you know? And like, do you understand the words of the song? What does it say? It's giving a list of all of our bad qualities, you know, like real heavy stuff. I'm wearing egotism and envy as my ornaments. I'm defeated by sleep. I mean, just like real heavy stuff. Everything you can check off. Yes, 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 yes. And then someone is singing, Amara Jivan Sada Paper. You're like, the mood is disturbed, you know? So I don't personally like to do it in an open arena. It's more like a smaller environment where you read through the lyrics. Everyone can try to imbibe the mood that is being there and then sung. But particularly the Acharyas have given so many songs about their relationship with their gurus or their appreciation of guru and Vaishnavas. And if we would be reading those repeatedly, then that will help the mind change its deliberation in the way it thinks about Vaishnavas. Just like if you want to stick a pole into a ground, then you have to dig in the same spot many times so that the hole is deep enough that the pole can go in and stay. If you only dig a little bit, then the pole cannot fit. So you have to dig for a long time, digging in the same spot so that it is deep enough, and then you can stick the pole inside and put up your volleyball net or whatever it is. So in the same way, these songs have to be meditated upon repeatedly. It's like we're doing everyday Guru Puja. That is one prayer in Gurvasika in the morning that has been mentioned here. And if you sing them without meditating on them, that is singing like a parrot, not like a human being. I heard this from Guru Govindamar, I thought it was funny. He was asking devotees to recite a shloka. They were recited, and he said, what is the meaning? And they wouldn't know the meaning. And he said, you should sing like a human being, not like an animal, like a parrot. So it means we're supposed to meditate on the meaning while singing. And that creates this digging effect by which you can put the pole of your gratitude in. See, without any gratitude, you will not be able to have regard. But there, the pole of gratitude has nowhere to stick in because there hasn't been deep enough deliberation. So why I should feel grateful? We know in the general, all devotees helped me in the very beginning, but we're always looking for that new gratitude, right? That new gratitude point. Because him pulling me out of the ocean wasn't sufficient enough, right? So what is the new point, you know? Okay, yeah, you did that for me a long time ago, but what is the new, what have you done for me lately? There was a song like that, I think, by Janet Jackson. What have you done for me lately? That is a whole mood, you know, she got it right on that point. What have you done for me lately? That is a whole mood, it's no gratitude. So the pole cannot fit, there's no gratitude. What have you done for me lately? Never mind, in fact, the devotees will be spending hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. What have you done for me today? What about that? That was yesterday. We have to live in the present. Spiritual life is eternally present. Like that, someone is saying. And that way, operati. Finish. Spiritual life finish. So we need to deepen our deliberation. And unfortunately, because we're generally not very spiritually qualified, our deliberations are not very deep. When you go to the altar at the Govinda's time, many of us try to offer our prayers. But to be real, how many of us honestly have very profound prayers at the Govinda? Mostly we, you know, oh, you look cute today, Lord. And sometimes we try to really muster up some devotion. Okay. Charnamrita, we go to the next thing, and you know, next day, next thing. It's because we're not, many of us at least, if we would examine ourselves, many of us may not be so spiritually elevated. At least I can speak for myself. We may not be so spiritually elevated, but therefore we can take help of the Acharya's Vakya. So we may not be able to offer, just like, I think I remember one time Krishna Smaranguru was mentioning how he had some exercise that he was doing with his students about finding out their bad qualities. And I think he mentioned like one student only had a list of three things. And that too was like clipping his nails. You know, I have a problem with biting my nails. That's it? You know, that's all you can find? What was doing? Bring me a Maharaji gun. Bring me Bhakti no target. But he'll help you out here. You know, since you're not able to perceive it, then the Acharyas will give assistance. So in the same way, because we don't have very deep appreciation and gratitude and deliberation about Guru, so then we should take help from the Acharyas, because they have it. So we read, and then that includes the contemporary Acharyas also, our Gurus, Srila Prabhupada, and the whole Guru Parampara. So much things they have written, and particularly I'm pointing out their songs. Take assistance and see how they are praying. Today I was doing it this morning. I was looking at a series of prayers about Guru, thinking of this poor prayer. Many of them I hadn't read before. Many of them were new songs that I wasn't even aware of. I was like, my God, There's so much wealth of things here. I wasn't even like aware of like five of the songs I was looking at. I didn't even know anything about it. And it was just the expressions were so exquisite, so succinct, and so precise in terms of the situation that we're in. Like one prayer was saying, due to my bad habits in my youth, due to my sinful engagement in my youth, I've developed so many bad habits that I have no power to engage in bhajan. I have no power to appreciate. And I was like, oh my God. And I highlighted it. This shloka, I need to learn this today itself. I need to learn it. And try to offer it at least with some feigning devotion. And there's so many prayers were like that. So we, and repeatedly we read, you know, perhaps if not daily, but regularly we have to subject our consciousness to those things, to those vibrations. Otherwise, we're very repeatedly subjecting our consciousness to the faults of devotees. Oftentimes, that is a tendency. And as a result, we become more and more hateful towards the Vaishnava. That is aparad. Just to feel envious of a devotee's offense. Not feel happy when you see a devotee's offense. How about that? That is intense. Therefore, I put the blindfold on. I should not see any Vaishnava because I might not feel happy. Then I'm implicated. This is the situation. So the reason is because we're subjecting our consciousness to vibrations which encourage hate because of our seen as an ordinary person, the centrally acquired vision of Vaishnavas and Guru. So we do one very, very well to subject this consciousness to the vibrations given by our acharyas. So we can hope to engender a real mood of service and devotion to Guru and to Vaishnavas, by which we can give up our offenses toward them and actually hope to chant the holy name of Krishna properly and make spiritual advancement. So if we are fortunate enough to do this, then the second paragraph is saying we'll be able to have the fortune of having darshan of Krishna. I'm using the language chant Hare Krishna. Otherwise, we remain only meagerly fortunate. We are Bhagavan because we've come to this spiritual movement. We have Bhagavad Gita, we're fortunate. But that fortune will not go anywhere if we do not actually really come to a profound appreciation for Vaishnavas and Guru. Therefore, in the introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada has mentioned that we should avail ourselves to the Chaitanya Bhagavad and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He says in the same paragraph. And recently you've been seeing, I've been reading Chaitanya Bhagavad casually, I'm not like deeply studying it, I'm just reading through it. And practically every single chapter has a whole section dedicated to why you should not blaspheme Vaishnavas. Literally, like every chapter, you know, a section dedicated to the importance of chanting Harinam, and huge sections dedicated to not offending devotees. Some chapters have two or three sections dedicated to that topic. You know, in the one I was reading yesterday, Lord Chaitanya was saying, anyone who worships me but does not appreciate my servant, offends him, blasphemes him, then I consider that worshiper to be cutting my body into pieces. I was like, how many times am I going to be blaspheming? But Lord Chaitanya was saying like that. And then he went on to say that if he is such an offender of my servant, if he chants my wish-fulfilling holy name, Nama Kalpataru, my wish-fulfilling holy name, then that chanting of Harinam will be the cause of his destruction in spiritual life. Maru said like that. And then he went on to say that if one can chant Harinam and give up blasphemy, that is a real principle of religion. And then he went on to say that if he gives up blasphemy of Vaishnavas and he chants one holy name, I will certainly deliver him back home, back to Godhead. Marvus, I was reading that yesterday. And then it's like whole sections like this. This is one of the sections that I recently read. So then I was appreciating that Prabhupada's instruction to that is so we could subject ourselves to that message, repeated, digging the hole in the ground. So we can put the pole of real gratitude and then we can really chant Hare Krishna. Otherwise, it would be very hard. The only reason one will not be advancing so much in spiritual life is due to aparads. The sinful activity does not have the power to stop spiritual life. Because it's a very significant thing, actually, sinful activity. That doesn't mean go and break the four other principles. But sinful life is not very powerful. It's compared to dust. So even if dust piles up for 20 years, you can easily wipe it away. But an offense is compared to a thunderbolt striking a rock. So that's pretty intense. Very hard to wipe that away. Thunderbolt strikes a rock. But to do, finish. So generally, the only thing that can stop a person's progress is this operandum. And that too, the most difficult to avoid generally is the Vaishnava aparad, because of interacting with Vaishnavas and on the platform of the body. That means seeing them with mind and senses. So it's very hard to avoid that. And as a result, many of us will be struggling in our progressive march forward towards the lotus feet of Krishna. So that will be my discussion for today. Thank you very much. If anyone wants to ask anything, I have about 5 minutes because I have to go and pick up okay. Why not? That makes sense. Why wouldn't a person be happy? Generally, it's due to uncontrolled mind. One is unhappy usually due to an uncontrolled mind. Just like it's mentioned that in austerity, the mind is one has to learn how to be satisfied. And Prabhupada teaches there, the mind becomes satisfied by detaching it from sense gratification. Or say, in the positive light, we were reading from Bhakti Loka yesterday, Sankalpa and I were reading from that yesterday, from the... Daryat section. So basically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in that section just discusses the first verse of NOI. And he says, therefore, mind control, if one will be successful in controlling his mind, then he has to give it a higher taste. Someone asked me that 2 weeks ago. I think Pachaku asked me that 2 days ago. He said, how do I stop fault finding? I said, you need a higher taste. Otherwise, how you will stop? If you don't taste something better, then you go for the lower taste. So if the mind will be uncontrolled, then we will not be happy. Because the mind is like a restless child. So, you know, a child is happy one moment, the next moment unhappy. The mind is very much like that. So we having uncontrolled minds, then there's no question of satisfaction, which means restlessness, which means offenses will start happening. So mind has to control his mind. It is not that we cannot control our mind and think we will be making progress, because uncontrolled mind will cause offenses. So we have to find out what gives us a taste in Krishna consciousness and focus more on that. Then when anything is asked of us, we'll be very satisfied. Okay, let's go for it.
You're saying that the only way to control your mind is to give up this evaluating and evaluating the devotees to take shots with the Acharya's words? When you study these songs, is there a particular time of day or a particular mood you should be in? I guess my question is, are there any external factors that you should adjust so that your absorption can be its best? Because I'm thinking, like you were saying in the morning, you know, when we offer prayers, covering prayers, and then it's like boom, 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 one after the other. So it's not the best time to meditate unless you're deeply, right? So could you give some...
Well, main thing, like, well, in that regard, when you're doing like Guru Puja or Guru Asakam, you can meditate. That time is not a problem as such. The main thing is just the repetition point, what the spirit of trying to just understand. You know? And the more you do it, the more you'll do it with a mood of trying to understand, with the mood that you can augment the service mood towards Guru and Vaishnavas. Then it should work out. The main success point in Krishna consciousness is the repetition point. Just like, it's the grinding effect. Just like if you take, I heard like this, if you take mercury and sulfur and grind it together for some period of time, then you'll get mascara. and you grind it. I think that's a mercury and sulfur. Some scientists still like this. Anyway, I saw it in the devotee's book. He was making this point. If you grind mercury and sulfur together for some time, then you get mascara. Anyway, you have to take it for granted. You don't know. On faith, you have to take it. So similarly, the way devotional services, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this also, that it's like a grinding effect. The process of bhakti in the material mind. So you're grinding it repeatedly, day in and day out. Day in and day out. And when you grind it, then the two kind of like, I don't want to use the word merging type of thing, but the idea is by grinding it, then another thing is produced. What does that other thing produce? Devotion to Krishna, prema. By repeated grinding. And that there's a Bhagavatam reference for that also. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. That devotion engendered by devotion. So sadhana gives rise to, you know, perfection in devotional service. And then it says, Brihartutpalakamtanu, then their bodies begin to exhibit hair standing on end, etc., you know, perfection state. So when one continues to grind the mind against the process of devotional service, it's a grinding process. Day in, day out, day in, day out. Then another thing, so in the same way, if we keep grinding the mind against these things repeatedly, you know, with cognition, not just like a parrot, but like a human being, then another thing will come out. Then, you know, the result of, you know, we would hope, the genuine appreciation of Hari Guru Vaishnavas. Okay, yes. Yes. Are there any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.